Welcome to Living Martial Arts with Master Ray Gale, aka the Dark Master. Living Martial Arts discuss and examines the everyday exercise, philosophy, and lifestyle of the martial arts enthusiast. The host talks about his own training, past and present, and he also interviews many martial artists to discover how they continue to live their own martial arts journey. Tune in for top tips on how to get the best out of your martial art. Or perhaps you're thinking of starting a martial art. This podcast offers you an easy way to dip your toe in. Sign up for the newsletter at livingmartialarts.com and get regular updates and training tips direct to your inbox. Follow the Dark Master on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Living Martial Arts.
Hi, and hello to the Martial Arts podcast fans, Living Martial Arts podcast fans. I'm back, the Dark Master, with another episode, and I've got a magnificent guest, somebody that I've been trying to get on for a long time, and he's very, very close to my heart for many reasons. I'm sure you'll, as we go through the podcast, you'll find out why. But I've got Mr. Lawrence Worry on the line, who's going to talk about his martial arts journey. How are you, sir?
Ray, I'm doing great, and there are no words to describe how honored I feel that you're, who was a teacher of me, interviewing me. It just feels like surreal to me. You are a person of inspiration in my life at the time when I was at university, and here you are. I need to get my head around this, but I'm doing great, and I'm happy to meet you again in a new kind of context than when I was younger.
Yeah.
We both moved on, and
yeah, wow. Definitely. Well,
it's great to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, and I think that this is quite a privilege and honor for me to, you know, to speak to somebody like yourself, who was very you probably don't realize how influential you were for me at that time as an instructor, because you know, we'll get into this, but you know, an instructor sort of feeds off the students and the feedback that they're getting, and that, whether that's positive or negative, and always got a positive, really, really positive vibe. In fact, I had a student, generally some of my students that you know, have to leave or go to university for whatever reason, I always thank them for teaching me something, for teaching me about myself. I always say to them, you know, thank you very much for what you've taught me, and they go, well, hang on, you were the teacher. I said, well, no, I was learning as well. But perhaps we'll get into that. But without sort of further ado, I'm going to get you to do as I always do with all my guests, really, is to talk about your martial arts journey, how it started, mm-hmm. how it developed, and we can take it from there. So the floor is yours.
Okay. So that's really taking it way back when I was 14 or 15. Mm. I was living in Richards Castle, which is near Ludlow, West Midlands at the time. And my brother and I found out that there was a local karate club. So we got involved in the karate. We really loved it. We really loved the atmosphere and the generous people. And it was, I think, as children of mixed culture parents as well, it was a nice way of being in an English society for us, just to do an activity where we were accepted and to enjoy something, you know, finally that we could do together. And so, yeah, we were really, really great time to learn something new about martial arts. And of course, it was a generation in the 80s where we were inspired by the Karate Kid and things like this. And it was the motivation, I think, at the time, kind of childish motivation, but yeah, it brought us to great things later.
Yeah, so it's so well.
Yeah, that was about 1 year, and then I was getting close to college studies and moved from home to Shrewsbury, to the technical college in Shrewsbury College of Arts and Technology, and that's when I discovered the TAGB Taekwondo. And I'm afraid I don't remember the name of the teacher. You might know who it was, actually, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't remember who's in Shrewsbury. I do remember it very well, but I'll probably, as you might remember, but go on.
Yeah. And that was a time where I also started changing physically. Like, I was a little bit overweight as a boy. And the college studies really gave me an inspiration to try to better myself physically. And I started going to the athletics track, running. And it was also where the Taekwondo school was at the college. So I was making friends with more fit and healthy people, and really like motivated me. Actually, I'm really thankful for that experience as well. So then I learned about Taekwondo. I learned about sparring. Always fun times, always inspiring times, and met amazing people as well. So that brought me to Bath, where I studied university, and then I met you. I met also the inspiring people who I trained with, like Adam Woodhouse.
Yes.
The other teacher, Mark Ogborn. And I took it from there. I was really like getting into it a lot more, joining some of the squad trainings. I just loved the path of bettering yourself, of improving. And it wasn't always easy. There were some struggles, there were difficult moments in the training. I always felt a little bit, I'm not naturally athletic. So I felt like I really had to overcome some kind of mental block. It's not naturally what I should be doing, but I gave myself the permission to overcome that block somehow and see how far I could get with that, you know?
Let me just stop you there, because there's a number of things, and I'll let you carry on in a moment. But there's things that you mentioned, and the first thing that I didn't know about you is that your parents were from mixed cultures. That didn't come across.
Right.
Am I allowed to ask what cultures you're referring to?
Yeah, my mother's French. And my father was half English, half Greek.
Ah, right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, because it shows a few things, really. At the time, you know, I was sort of probably a lot preoccupied with many things. But what I try to do now, which is very different, I do try and get to know my students, get to know their background a little bit. You know, I always ask, you know, where their parents are from and all that sort of stuff. Whereas people probably didn't realize in the day in Bath, but I was actually quite shy. I still am, although people listen to this will go, that's ridiculous. But I always felt as if I was sort of prying a little bit into people's lives, and I didn't really want to come across that way. But now I tend to ask people, you know, about their heritage and things like that. So that was the first thing. The other thing was, you mentioned about your one thing that I always remember about you was your strength. You were you whether that had developed prior to coming, but you were very strong, very very strong, and you had a very good athletic build. So it was quite a surprise when you said to yourself that you weren't naturally athletic, because when you came along, I thought, wow, you know, this guy's got some, you know, good shoulders, good physique,
right.
And you seem to handle things really well.
I assume what you're saying, maybe naturally athletic was maybe not the right expression, but I didn't feel like I easily could do the exercises. Like, I felt a bit lazy about it, or I felt like I didn't really, my body was telling me not to do this, these exercises, but I thought, like, if I want to get anywhere, I guess I have to do it. But I think, I do have a naturally strong build, but maybe I don't have the mindset in a natural way to train as an athlete or to train in this way, in a gym or something. I still feel quite uncomfortable in a gym. Like,
well, yeah,
like it's my natural environment, for example.
Well, I can sort of know what you're on about there. I actually don't feel a gym is the place for me. I did do a bit of gym work, and I actually started doing some again recently, but I've gone back to just doing my stuff at home and doing it on the field, which I quite enjoy a lot more. So actually going to a gym. It's you're sort of walking out of, I just feel not quite as comfortable as I
should. So, now we touched the subject, it makes me realize actually that I was quite creative in trying to induce myself into enjoying that aspect of training as well. Like, I remember that, if you remember as well, maybe, that I was doing these trainings in water.
Yeah. Yeah.
You remember that? Like, yeah, I was doing strength training for my legs in the swimming pool at the leisure center.
Yeah. Yeah. I do.
And I think it was like, for me, a way of overcoming this kind of block that I had of going into some stereotypical mode. And doing my own creative way of building strength or getting some fitness. I guess that's what blocked me, is I didn't want to be like stereotyped in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I know what you said, but it's funny because you were quite you were quite unusual actually as a student, because I knew you were quite quiet, and you always seemed very methodical in the way that you approach things, and you had a level of focus and concentration that was actually far beyond your years at the time. I remember it very, very well. You when you were in class, you didn't look at anybody else. You were focused ahead, listened to what I was saying, and it was great for me as a very young instructor at the time.
Yeah,
to have someone like you in the class, it was a great example.
I found you very interesting.
Oh, thank you.
but everything that you were saying was very inspiring, and I guess you got me like in the zone where I felt like if I lose concentration now, I might miss some useful knowledge or information. So I kind of, I pushed myself to listen better. I guess I can explain it that way.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry. So carry on from that journey, because you obviously you're in the class there. You've gone up some grades and so on. And
right.
Go for that.
And I remember the competition scene as well. It was a lot of fun. Sometimes scary also when we started doing more outside of the region stuff and going to these WTF style things where it was full contact. And I remember the higher level, of course, was more full contact than it should be, probably.
Yeah,
that's quite scary. But always a great experience, always something I learned from. Of course, that exciting achievement at the time where we had these world champs, and I achieved the title for the breaking, the board breaking.
Yes. That was 91, wasn't it?
Don't even remember the year.
Yeah, that was 91, because that was the year that my students beat me at everything. which was nice, because I remember you beat, I was in the destruction with you, and you beat me at that. I got one of my students got further in the spar, and that wasn't a particularly I'm trying to think at the event, but I remember going home. I was quite happy, to be honest. It was mixed feelings, because I was going home, and in my mind I was going to retire, and I was going to retire happy. Because my students had got to a level where I thought, wow, they're really good. And it's three instructors' dream to get their students to a higher level than them.
Yeah.
But I was sad because I was going to miss the competition.
Yeah, it's like a new phase.
Yeah. I was in that place where I was thinking, oh, I'd filled my years, so many years with this.
Yeah.
And that was to let it go. And it was tough to let it go. But anyway, sorry, you go.
No, not at all. I mean, I don't remember too much about it, but I remember still like the sensations, the feelings. And also that I saw our relation teacher student in a new way as well. I guess I saw you as a new person. The humility, the greatness at the same time. As a humility, and that was really inspiring for me. And I think it was also an awakening that, it's not just about winning, and it's not just about being the best, that you connected to your students, and you wanted as much for them as you wanted for yourself, and that was humbling. that was humbling to see and maybe see you in a new light, actually. That's what I do remember in that way. Probably inspired me also for when I'm getting passes now, even now, how to perceive my students and what do I try to get from my students now. You know, it's not about really trying to show them that you're better, right? But that, yeah, there's a learning path. There are things which we all uniquely do well, and maybe some things which we don't do so well, but by connecting and coming together and practicing together, we can help each other.
Yeah.
The weaker parts. And this kind of collaboration, I understood, was more important than like showing off that you are the best.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Good learning for me. Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. I completely agree with that. So, I mean, when you were obviously after doing things like that, you know, in the competition, from there, where did you go? Because obviously there's the life that came after that, but go on.
Maybe you didn't know how I got out of Europe, even got out, first of all, out of England. So I qualified as a software engineer with the university diploma, Bachelor of Science in Computer Software Engineering.
Right.
I think it was software technology, the title of the subject. And it got me to work in some big companies like Matra Marconi and some local companies as well. And then I was like, just curious, what's out there like in the world? Like what other kinds of companies are out there? I came across an ad in a newspaper, a local newspaper. I was working in Matra Marconi in Portsmouth at the time. So I'd already left Bath. It was like 1997.
And sorry, I'm just going to stop you for that. I do apologize. I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Do I remember this correctly? Because I remember you were working down that way. I thought it was Southampton, but if you say Portsmouth, I know it's down that way.
Yeah, it was Portsmouth. Yeah.
Now, did you? Because in my mind, I was telling someone about this. I was interviewing a student, which I was looking forward to, who used to hitchhike to down that way.
It wasn't uncommon for me to hitchhike at the time.
Yeah, because I remember.
I was also busking. I was busking with the guitar. I was hitchhiking.
So yes.
Outside of my studies, I was, of course, trying to make a buck here and there.
Because I remember. And I remember you saying to me as well, you were busking. You were saying you were trying to get your training fees. So you're out and stuff like that. And I don't know whether this is my mind playing tricks with me, but that's
probably true.
That's the stuff that I remember.
Yeah. So I eventually got a conventional job, and I was working for 1 year at this branch of Matra Marconi. And then I found this newspaper ad, and it said, call this number in case you're interested in an international job. And I thought, I was in these digs, you know, they were pretty like rundown digs in Portsmouth. Thought I'd give it a try, see what happens. And it was some American company. And I said, we're taking on people who have an experience in software engineering. You can start next month. Basis in Germany, but we expect that you're going to do assignments in America and all parts of Europe. I was like, okay, I'm signing up. Where do I sign?
Yeah.
And that was the interview. And they said, okay, we'll just we'll repatriate you. We'll get your stuff over. And I moved to... first of all, it was to Belgium, actually. And then from Belgium, they sent me to Washington, D.C., spent 4 or 5 months working there. Then from Washington, D.C., they sent me to Düsseldorf in Germany. And from Düsseldorf, I was 12 months there. But then I started to get a little bit anxious about the fact that maybe this isn't my field of work. This isn't really what I want to do on my life. And then I started to branch out into healing, like osteopathy. I actually went into osteopathy. So I took a break, I took a sabbatical, and tried to change my career path. But that's kind of important, also related to martial arts. I know I went into more of my career, but Actually, the intention was, as I'd left England, was anyway to find like Taekwondo school, because that's what I knew. So I thought that would make sense to continue my knowledge. So at that time, I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to change any martial art. I'm happy with Taekwondo. It's great. But it's true that at the time, at the last year of university, I'd dabbled with Aikido through a sensei, Paul Mitten. Maybe you know about him, Paul Mitten.
Yeah, I do.
Quite a well-known personality in the Bath area for many things, not just for the martial arts, but also for community reasons and helping education in Bristol and Bath. So he's quite a prominent figure.
And so,
I had some kind of ideas about Aikido, and maybe it might be something I might be interested in one day, but it wasn't the first thing that I thought of doing when I left England. I really wanted to continue Taekwondo. And I found a nice school in America as well, in Washington, D.C., and I joined this Argentinian man, and I don't remember his name. Very inspiring as well. But it was more when I came to Europe, I found that joining Taekwondo groups was not so accessible for me. And I can't explain why exactly, but somehow there was a barrier. And I don't know if it was just because I didn't find the right club or that maybe, you know, it's like it's so tight within a club that to get in one, after you've had the experiences, somehow there's a barrier that they don't let you in so easily or something like this. I don't believe that's for every group, but at least for the groups I tried to train with, it didn't feel easy to me. It didn't feel like it was flowing by going that way. I had knowledge of another martial art, which was Aikido. I thought, well, at least, you know, I could give Aikido a try then. Maybe that's more welcoming or more easy to get into. And indeed, I did actually find it easier to get into even in Washington, D.C. There was an Aikido group I was practicing with, quite a famous sensei, Sawatomi Sensei, in Washington, D.C. And then I found a club in Dusseldorf, and also quite a well-known Japanese teacher was teaching there. So I was lucky also to meet high-ranking Japanese teachers. So that became a distraction from my Taekwondo path, as you can imagine. Disrupted my Taekwondo career in that way. So I just went with the flow, actually, at the time. And so that's how I ended up more interested in Aikido, finally.
I think that you know, knowing you as I did then, I think anything that you'd have sort of come across, I'm sure you'd have taken it in your heart, because I think you're that type of character, and I think the Aikido, they're lucky that you came across upon them, and I'm sure you're making a huge difference. I mean, I see your some of your pictures on Facebook and social media, and you know, just a couple of things, a couple of the videos that I've done, and the sort of warmth and your passion comes across, which is quite nice. I think that's always really, really important. So, you know, with the did you find, you know, you said you were doing obviously Aikido. Did you find the it difficult to transition, because obviously Taekwondo is at that time, although the style that I do now is a little bit different to what I was teaching at that time. Did you find it difficult, because obviously, you know, with Taekwondo it was more of a what I would call a hard style,
external
Aikido. I do use some Aikido movements in my one sparring, by the way, but anyway, nice. Go on.
I totally get what you're saying. That was definitely a barrier in the beginning. In fact, it's one of the things which really impressed me when I started Aikido is I saw a movement that looked like some kind of an arm lock.
Yeah.
And I know that we were doing sign of joint locks and arm locks and things. And I know Mark's very good at these things, and I remember he was teaching those things. And I remember challenging Paul a little bit about it. And I approached Paul and I said, I see what you're doing. And I was a little bit cocky and I was like, I see what you're doing, but we do it in Taekwondo like this.
Ouch.
How cocky are we? And so I can't believe I did that. And so I tried to like to grab the top of his arm and kind of bend it with external force.
Yeah, yeah.
And he countered me in a very flowing and fluid way, and he dropped his center. Mm. He wasn't really doing a technique, but he grounded me.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
In a very gentle way. And that was something which really impressed me. Like, he didn't hurt me or didn't put me in any danger. But I didn't achieve my goal of showing him how we do it in Taekwondo.
Yeah.
And it made me like think, all right, okay, there's some principle there. We don't use.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, externally, fitness, everything, that so many good things in Taekwondo, which should not be ignored.
Yeah.
Or in every martial art, as you know, and I know that you have an open mind to all the martial arts. I completely agree with you to have an open mind about all the martial arts.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And that one principle was the kind of the internalization part and the what they call ki energy, qi in Chinese, the use of your center. That was a breakthrough for me. That was like, okay, that's something that I have to get my head over, because that's something I never really, I mean, of course we do practice internal stuff, but maybe we don't make it in the other martial arts so predominant as a learning, right?
I agree.
I mean, I believe that actually every martial artist who's been practicing for a long time is on an internal process. They're somehow internalizing something.
Yes.
Of course. Right. And in the end, I think that's what, I mean, we're all just trying to know ourselves better in some way.
Yeah.
And by practicing together, we also know something more about the world, right? And how the situation of the world is. But first of all, it starts with ourselves, and we internalize. It's a little bit of an introverted experience to be a martial artist in some way. But we, because we practice together and we externalize what's happening internally, we also feel what's happening in the world and understand a bit more of the world based on our experiences. But we're all having unique experiences. And we connect in that way. And it's amazing that we can do something which physically might be different, but we're still connected. We're still connected. And that's the internal part of all the martial arts, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think I think there's eventually we all sort of come to a very sort of similar place. The way I think about martial arts is now very, very different. I've come up again up myself, meditation for me. I do some breathing, which I never did in my 20s. And, you know, concentrate on those things, which was difficult for me. But for me now, I see it as an integral part of martial arts. Whereas at the time I didn't, but it's taken me that, you know, a certain path and a journey to get to that point, whereas maybe martial arts are stressing that in the very early stages. But I think, you know, we all come to that point in the end, because at the end, physically, you know, your physical prowess, if you want to call it, is going to decrease. So it has to be something else. It has to be something.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm not the same, you know, person doing, you know, jumping reverse tourniquets that I was 40 years ago. I get that. The other thing what was interesting as well is I think as I've got more mature in my martial arts, I realize the things that Taekwondo doesn't do well. And it's interesting you say that, because, and you know, you talked about Adam Woodhouse. Now I've got Adam Woodhouse. He's back at my class teaching self-defense for me.
That's great.
But you know, practical self-defense that he's learned in his profession, which was, you know, based on that type of thing. Which is really good. And the locks and things that you mentioned, don't even do those in the class anymore. It's, I think to myself, well, you know, Taekwondo has some really good things, and I'll do that. But if I want to do anything else, actually, maybe I'll look somewhere else for it.
Yeah,
which is what I tend to do. So yeah, no, that's really good. So from the, I mean, moving on from the you know, you obviously you know, you started doing your Aikido, and you know, you're I don't know the Aikido levels, but I'm assuming, and from what I see on social media, that you've reached I hate to say a high level, because we're always in that learning mode, and that's another thing that I've learned as I've got older. Yeah. It's actually how little you do know. But
yeah,
but,
exactly.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that you've done it, and you've been doing it some time, so you have a certain amount of competence.
Yeah, well, the grading systems in every martial arts, they're interesting, because it's all based on the origins, how the founders wanted to structure it, how to provide a learning system that's understandable by other people. And yeah, I'm fifth dan officially in Aikido, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And there are only 10 dans maximum. And I think there's only like one 10th dan, maybe two, in the world. But that for me doesn't mean anything. I'll never get to the 10th dan for sure. And that's not what I'm trying to reach.
Yes. Yeah.
And in fact, physical exams stop at 4th dan.
Yeah.
In Aikido. Mm. And had my last physical exam, I think it was in 2015 or 16. Mm. And after that, it's by recommendation of the organization based on what kind of contribution you've made as a teacher. And that might be similar to other martial arts.
It is. It's similar to what I heard when I first started Taekwondo. That was the thing. It was said, you know, you get to a certain level, and after that, it really depends on what you do for the art.
Yeah.
That was the thing. But sorry, I'll stop.
Yeah, you. No, I think that can be quite similar for many styles and arts. And it makes sense, because as we get older, we're not really there to prove anything more physically, right?
Mm.
But more about the knowledge, about the appliance of your art in everyday life, and what it means, yeah, how meaningful it can be in your life and other people's lives. Yeah. So yeah, the grading is an interesting one, because in some way I'm not really one who likes to encourage people to do grades.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like it has to be there, because, you know, we're not in this utopian system where people understand that learning is something organic, but they need some kind of guidance sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a reality of modern society. We need these feeds to help us, to bring us along a path somehow. And yeah, that's how it is. So I think it's something to accept and you know, just join with, rather than counter or to reject. Yeah. So
No, it's great. So you know, as you're doing your Aikido and you're passing this along, what would you say are the strengths of Aikido? Physical or mental?
Yeah, I don't know if I can call it a strength, but I would call it something unique, which maybe sets it apart from other martial arts.
Yeah.
And it can't be really a strength unless it's really real, right? I guess, but because this is more philosophical.
Okay.
And that is that in Aikido, we try to achieve something called mutual defense.
Okay.
Which is that you, sorry, I just realized the sound is on my computer. I'm just going to mute the sound of my speaker.
Okay.
So this mutual defense in Aikido is, the goal is that as much as you want to protect yourself, you also try to protect the attacker. And which is, of course, if somebody only knows the language of violence, how can you protect somebody without violence?
Yeah. Right?
And that's unachievable in some way.
Mm.
But what is impressive is the way that you practice for that. although you can't reach it, you strive for it in some way. And that can be life-changing. That can change you. And I think that's a strength. That's a concrete strength, is that it builds a character in a way. Not to say that you shouldn't use, you know, self-defense, physical self-defense techniques when you have to.
Yes. Yeah.
But that you're training in a different direction, and it's almost contradictory, but it forges a character in a way where you look for peaceful options, where you, first of all, just want calm in your mind. Where you, first of all, just try to create a nice, happy environment, calm environment, rather than looking out for that one dangerous situation.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you use the word fight a lot in your mind, you start to search for a fight in a way. So you're propagating something, your thought patterns, to the external world. Whereas if you constantly make a pattern of looking for peace or looking for calm and having a calm mind, you will propagate that pattern into your into the context of your life.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh, just a second. That's the only problem. If I turn off the volume, I can't hear you, Si.
Okay. No. That's interesting thoughts there that you mentioned, and I think that it's an interesting thing, because you know, when I'm teaching, you know, and I'm maybe mentioning self-defense, what I tend to mention now is body language and voice, rather than punching and kicking. To have a strong voice and a strong body language, so you avoid it at all costs, and that's my message I try and get, particularly to the children. Actually, is to try and think of your body language. Your voice is the thing that actually you're going to use for your self defense, and hopefully, then if you use those properly, then you don't have to have any physical confrontation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the plan anyway.
Yeah.
That's the theory.
Yeah. I mean, there are many aspects which you don't really think about when you're practicing, but I think that become integrated into your life, and you don't realize how they get integrated. Sometimes it's some sort of a process which is sublime going on the underlayer.
Yes.
Things like grounding, just grounding yourself.
Yes.
Actually, I had an incident with a bicycle in Amsterdam, which can happen. There's a lot of bike going around, and you might get hit by one at some point, right?
Yeah.
And I was just walking along the path, and it was a footpath, not a bicycle path. But for some reason, a cyclist was going on the footpath. And sure. they rammed into me, but I didn't fall. The cyclist fell. So I was kind of confused, because I turned around, there was somebody lying on the ground, a bicycle on the ground. And I was like, "Are you okay? What happened?" And he said, "Yeah, I just cycled into you. I didn't see you." And I thought, is that because I'm grounded? I don't know. It's like, some things I can't explain, but I feel like if I hadn't had the grounding, I might have been affected.
No, I know what you mean.
I think there are strengths which we're not always aware that we've developed.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe somebody will pick it out. They'll show it to you at some point.
Yeah.
And then you might wonder, like, oh, okay, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. throughout your, as I said, knew you as a Taekwondo martial artist, and I'm sure you've taken that passion into your Aikido, and it's a bit of a strange question. My next question is that, you know, where do you see it going? Because people ask me that, and I said, well, exactly where it is now. I'm going to be teaching, and I love teaching, and I can't stop doing anything else, really. It's not, you know, the days of me training for a competition are over, but what I like to do is to get in front of people and talk about my passion and show them you know, why it's great for them. So I don't know. There was a question in there, but go for it.
I guess the question is like, how do you see your future in martial arts, or do you?
Yeah.
What's the future for martial arts in general?
Well, yours in particular. I mean, I think martial arts will continue. I mean, some good, some bad. You know, I think obviously martial arts, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, martial arts, the Olympics. I don't think personally think that's a good thing, and I think that will change. Maybe you'll have two types. You'll have a sport version and a martial art version, if you want to call it that. But that's probably a conversation for another day. But yeah, how do you see yourself within it?
Within the arena. Mm. Well, I would like to think that any martial art starts with friendship in some way.
Mm.
And so for me, it's also about building good friendships. And also something which isn't talked about a lot, actually, which is mental health.
Mm, yeah.
And how every martial art actually can help a lot with mental health.
Mm.
I have members of my family also with problems of mental health. And I think a lot of people do, but it's not talked about.
Mm.
And I think that practice of any kind, which involve body and mind, will allow the discussion to happen.
Yeah.
Will allow that to open up. And I would like to think that my Aikido development is going to be useful as a tool for that kind of thing in the future as well. And already I'm helping outside of the mat. I'm going into companies and helping with employees' mental health.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like helping with stress levels. Also with toxic relationships at work.
Mm.
So I think that Aikido can be a very useful tool for that. Probably a better tool than defending yourself in the street, because I'll be the first to admit that I couldn't use an Aikido technique to defend myself. I'd probably have to resort to my old Taekwondo experience from that. But something which I see as more everyday needed in family.
Yeah, yeah.
It's how we can have a more mentally healthy society, have more mentally healthy way of working. I mean, I don't want to spend my life thinking that the rat race is the other world.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, if the rat race didn't have to be a rat race, if it could be a world where you could enjoy working, you could enjoy the balance. I don't even want to call it work-life balance. I would like to say disbalance, in that you enjoy your life more than your work. If you could work in that way, then it wouldn't have to be a rat race, right?
Yeah.
And yet you could still do things efficiently because you have good relationships and the work team works well together, and you know, you're not mentally stressed. So everything should just work in coercion and blending and harmony. Yeah. And this is like idealistic, I know, but that's science, kind of where I want to take it in the future. And that doesn't just apply to the working place. It applies to domestic situations. It applies to my Aikido club, my group, and the groups I join with, the friendships I make.
Mm.
So I'd like to build that context around me and others to do that too, because I think that's a healthy way of making a practice for myself, but also as a group in a community.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. No, I wholeheartedly agree with those sentiments. And but we're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's gone really quick.
Really?
Yeah, it's gone really, really quick.
I'm enjoying it.
I have to save some for the next time. And I will say to my guests that there's a couple of things that you need to agree to, that you need to agree to come back again and talk more. You know, if there's anything that you want any of the people listening to this to see, or anything that might be of relevance to them, we can put those in the show notes and so on.
Sure.
So we do that. But just before we end, I mean, you've got a couple of passions. I'm not sure if they're passions. I remember you playing the guitar. I was always quite jealous when I was you know, heard you going out busking, because it was always something that I wanted to do, and never really had the sort of the time. You know, I had kids at a very young age, and you know, there's lots of things happening in my life. I'm spending a lot more time playing music now, which is nice, and I really enjoy my music. I'm assuming you're still playing.
That's right. Yeah, still yeah. playing and still enjoying this hobby of mine, which is you can call it a passion.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much to learn, just like in the martial arts, in music, there's so much to learn, right?
Yes, yeah.
It's a never-ending story, and there's so much inspiring music out there, so many great musicians.
Yeah.
It's so nice to, it's one of the pleasures of life, music. And by the way, I organize like every 3 months or so, do an open mic at my home, so you're always welcome to
perform
in Amsterdam.
I'll have to try and make a beeline for that. Yeah, definitely. Well, I play a bit of guitar. I also play a little bit of harmonica as well. I'm not particularly that good, but I started playing harmonica about 20 years ago, I suppose. And I do enjoy that as well, which is quite nice, and that's quite good because it's quite portable. I know a guitar is portable, but a harmonica is even more portable, which is great. But the other thing I was going to say is that you have a motorbike as well, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you see where we're
living. We have a lot of things in common.
Yeah, yeah, we're
parallel lives.
Parallel lives. Is that your only form of transport? And do you know at the moment?
It's useful for commuting to the office. Sometimes I don't have to go to the office every day. I've got a very relaxed office life.
Yes.
But when I go to the office and it's good weather, it's great to go on the bike.
Yeah.
Really love my Honda CB1300.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Quite an old bike now, but it's one of the first fuel injections from 2005.
Yeah.
And still got a beautiful sound and never had anything wrong with it. It's just keeps going. And
I've got one that's 23 years old as well, actually, a motorbike. Bike. It's a Suzuki 650 SV650, the old style one, which is I think it's 23 years old, the bike now, and that's quite nice. It's quite good because it's got no tech on it, and I can work on it, which is quite nice, and I like that. I recognize no computer chips. Yeah, that's what I like. Yeah, no computer chips, which is nice. But thank you very much for taking the time. I really, really appreciate it. It's so nice to see you. As I said, you were a huge part of my early days teaching at Bath Martial Arts, Bath Taekwondo. And, you know, I'm so glad that you've gone on and you're still doing martial arts. And,
I'm really glad that we reconnected again, Ray. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we'll meet up again sometime.
I'm sure we will. I'm sure I haven't.
At least have a spin. Bikes and have a jam.
Yeah, I haven't been to Amsterdam. Oh, when was the last time I went to Amsterdam? I want to say probably 8 years ago was the last time, but I do plan to go again. So
right, always welcome to pop by.
Definitely
an afternoon together.
Yeah,
it'd be great.
That'll be nice. It's the only place in Europe that I eat pizzas. I'm not a big pizza eater, but the they seem to have nice pizzas in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I can take you to a very nice Italian restaurant.
All right. Okay. Hey, listen, stay on the line for a second while I just close this down. And we'll.
Right. Yeah.
But I just want to say thank you very much to the Living Martial Arts podcast fans. I hope you've enjoyed a chat with a really, really nice young man. I say young man because he's younger than me. Really, really nice chap. And he's part of my early teaching days, and it was always a pleasure to teach. So thank you very much. Hope you've enjoyed the interview as much as I have. Thank you
Ray.